We're in Genesis 21. We're heading toward the biggest of the big chapters with Abraham. Not quite there yet. So 21, verse 1, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. Verse 2.
Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time God had promised him.
Okay. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Yitzhak, which means laughter. Verse 4.
And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him.
Mm-hmm. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Verse 6.
And Sarah said, God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me.
And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And you can make a huge amount of preaching out of why did Sarah laugh? Or just simply, Sarah laughed. Why? What's going on? At first, when Sarah laughs, it's a laughter with bitterness and disappointment and doubt, and it won't happen. And I've lived all my life waiting for this, and the promise has always been dangled out there in front of me. And where is it? And God says, why did Sarah laugh? And Sarah says, I didn't laugh. No, but you did. And you realize God is dealing with her in the disappointment, addressing that, and talking with her in her time of disappointment. And then a year later, Sarah is laughing again. Everyone who hears this will laugh with me. God has given me laughter in my old age. There are worse things to be called if you're a child. Aren't there? To have a name that means laughter. Yeah. Benoni.
Not my child.
No. No. Son of my sorrow.
Son of my sorrow. Yeah. Benoni. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so Jacob changes his name to Benjamin, son of my right hand. Rachel had Benjamin, and she was dying, and called him son of my sorrow. And then his name was changed. Lo-Ami, Hosea's son.
Not my child. Child, yeah.
Had his name changed to Ami, my child. Names mean something.
Caleb.
Hmm?
Caleb.
Means?
Dog.
Hmm.
Deborah means bee.
Yes,
in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. But
so I'm well-dressed.
There are much worse things to be named than laughter. And to grow up with your name meaning laughter and have that as part of who you are. You know, God brought laughter and joy finally.
Hosea.
So this is sweet. And Abraham was 100 years old. Okay. Off to the side. Verse 8.
And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned.
Mm-hmm. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. Verse 10.
And she said to Abram, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac.
Mm-hmm. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son Ishmael. Verse 12.
But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for though Isaac shall be your offspring, be named.
Okay.
But through Isaac shall be your offspring.
Yeah. So, basically God is promising, I'll watch over them, but you have to focus on the promise, and okay, this is tough. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. The assurance that God would watch over him. So, will Ishmael simply be cast off and have no inheritance and what belongs to sons of Abraham, sons in faith? And you got to say, no, that's not in there. Because God will remember the children of Ishmael and call them to faith. And he did. Over and over again.
They're still fighting over the inheritance.
Well, the inheritance is physical property that's temporary. In this time frame, it's temporary. But what is the real promise? In your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. All the families of the earth will be blessed. And God doesn't forget that. And so, though time passes, and though many wander off, God remembers his promise and keeps on visiting the children of the children of the children of the children of the children to call them back over and over and over again. Just like the people of Israel. Many wandered off, and God kept visiting the children of the children of the children of the children and so on to call them back to be his people. It's a different path, but is the offer of salvation now cut off from the descendants of Ishmael? No. We're going to get into this in the next generation, Jacob and Esau. Is Esau cut off? No. He has a different route he's going to walk, and his route is going to be more difficult, but is God going to call him again and again and again, and his descendants after him? Yeah. Still, there's a promise that goes through the line of Abraham. What's the promise?
Through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed.
Yeah, so the promise of the Christ to come through that line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's way more important than any land. And the reason why the land was promised to be in their inheritance and that they would live in it is because of what God was going to do at a certain spot in that land. And we call it the Mountain of the Lord, or the Mountain of Genesis 22. And that's important to realize that the only reason the land is important is because of what would happen at that spot. Now, if you go and take a trip to the Holy Land and take all these tours, you'll understand that it is very significant for Christians to walk around the places where Jesus walked. Tremendous stuff. Because that's our heritage. That's where God did what he did for us. And then you get to that one spot, and you talk about the hill outside of Jerusalem, and the tomb where he was laid, and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which probably is. You know, it leans pretty far to the one side. Probably is the real thing. It's inside in a fancy adorned building, but the actual tomb itself, very plain. And so we go back to Genesis 21, verse 14.
So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba.
Mm-hmm. And God will watch over her.
He better, because she's wandering in the desert with a baby and a skin of water.
When the water and the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Verse 16.
Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bow shot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Now I've got a footnote that says the child began to sob. But that...
No, she lifted up her voice and wept.
Yeah. Why would they say in Hebrew, Septuagint, the child?
Oh, Septuagint. Yeah, that's a Jewish interpretation version.
Because the next verse says God heard the boy cry?
Yeah, because is Hagar weeping?
Well, I would assume.
Yeah. Is the child crying?
Yeah.
Well, usually when the child looks and sees the mother crying, the child cries.
Or when the child's
he's
deposited under a bush, left alone in some distress.
Did you look at the Hebrew?
Yeah, the Hebrew is, she lifted her voice and cried.
The reference says the child was about 16.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be carrying him.
No. It says, while these words might suggest that Ishmael was placed on Hagar's shoulders, this is hardly likely, since Ishmael is about 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it says to see verses.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the child. In other words, that doesn't say he put the child on her shoulder.
Well, maybe
he put the water on his shoulder.
No, the responsibility was put on her shoulder.
And just up here it makes it sound like it's a little child.
Okay, so he gets her ready to go.
Yeah.
Gives her bread, puts a skin of water on her shoulder,
right.
Gives her Ishmael, and sends them off.
Right.
And
but then it, when it said that, you know, Isaac grew and was weaned.
Okay, but let's follow up on this one, okay?
Well, but that ties in because
that would place him about 16 years old.
Yeah.
Now,
they're weaned at 16?
No.
No.
Isaac was weaned.
Let's listen for a second. How old was Ishmael when Isaac was born?
Yeah.
14. Ishmael was circumcised at 13, and that's when God gives Abram the promise
that next year.
Oh.
So
then
that's 14.
Oh.
And then the child's weaned.
Oh,
say about 16.
Oh, I was thinking they were closer in age.
Okay.
Okay.
15, 16. But when the water in the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Now, the child apparently is weak.
They've
been traveling in the desert.
Yeah.
It takes a while to drink a skin of water.
And she has some sit or lie under one of the bushes.
Okay.
And she's just getting ready for both of them to die.
Okay.
She's weeping. And then verse 17. Verse 17.
And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is."
Okay, now.
Not the cry, but the voice.
And God heard the voice of the boy, and what? Be specific here. No, and God heard the voice of the boy
crying as he was there.
And
the angel
of God. And it has been traditional to interpret the angel of the Lord as being second person of the Trinity. The angel of the Lord, second person of the Trinity. So is this second person of the Trinity? And the angel of the Lord, or the angel of God, called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is." Pull in verse 18 to try and clarify this. Verse 18.
"Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation."
For who will?
I will. Jesus.
Ah, so this is God, person of the Trinity, but God. And it is God who has called to her. And normally, the angel of the Lord, or the angel of God, second person of the Trinity, as opposed to an angel of the Lord, or an angel of God. There's a big difference there. So who's watching over Ishmael? Ah, you narrow that down to Jesus.
Because it says the angel.
Has then God cut off the Ishmaelites?
No.
There is the Redeemer who is present at that point. Their path is going to be different than Isaac's path and all of Isaac's descendants, but it is a path that the Redeemer will watch over them, walk with them, remember them, call them. And this is something that we allow those who teach double predestination to run way too far on things like this. Those who teach double predestination teach that God chooses some to be saved and he chooses some to be damned. And whatever you are from God's choice, you can't cross that over. And then they talk about the Bible and about the acts of God using terms like sovereignty and might and authority and, how's that song go? There's a song, I'll remember it in the course of this. Meanwhile, in the Lutheran way of looking at things along the Lutheran path, we talk about God's grace and means of grace and God's mercy and God's call in Jesus Christ. And that call is for all. And God desires all to be saved, none to perish. It is our own stubbornness that gets us away from God, but God is a God of grace and mercy, and all who are saved because of what God has done, and he persistently pursues all those who have wandered from his ways. And we will not cross over and say that God chooses some to be damned, because then you can section off and write off a whole bunch of people. Has God done that?
No, he desires all people to be saved.
But it says that, that he desires all people to be saved in his word.
Yeah. That double predestination thinking comes from John Calvin, Reformed churches, Presbyterian, and then there are mixed churches in there. You know, if you've been elected in God's hidden will, then that's all you need.
Then he does harden the heart.
And if God has chosen to damn you, no matter what you do trying to believe in Jesus, he will harden your heart and you won't be able to.
Pharaoh.
That's not the way it works.
Thank goodness.
Did God call Pharaoh?
Yeah.
Pharaoh hardened his heart. God called again. Pharaoh hardened his heart 10 times over. And each time, God ramps up the urgency of the call. And each time, Pharaoh responds by even more hardening his heart until it's too late.
I wonder how many times he called his
wife.
Oof. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that North and Korean.
On the other hand,
yeah.
How many times did God call Paul? Before Paul actually responded.
We don't know.
The disciples, and then leading up to the execution of Stephen, and then the Christians who were put in jail by Paul, and each one of them being a witness to Paul.
Until finally Jesus had to show up and say,
right.
Hey!
Blinded it.
Yeah. Listen now. Your eyes are blind. You can't see anything. You got to listen to me. Yeah.
So,
I got to go down.
So it is legitimate when a Christian says to somebody who is just darn stubborn and will not believe, repent. Worse things can happen to you. And there are times when Christians have prayed for God to pursue, and no matter what it takes, pursue and pursue. And there are those that come to faith and say, God pursued me, hound of heaven. Google, hound of heaven, and you'll find some interesting stuff under hound of heaven. The hound of heaven hunts us down and pursues us, and sometimes has to make our life absolute misery before we turn.
My son-in-law's father said he had to be flat on his back to look up.
Yep. So, okay, where are we? Verse 19.
And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink.
Okay, so just kind of missed that well?
Maybe it was a Habib.
I'm sure it was
Habib.
How big was the skin of water? How big was the skin?
No, it was a well of water.
No, but the skin.
Yeah, it's probably the size of a goat. Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's what they did typically was goat.
How big of a goat?
Well, yeah, that's a good question.
But there's a range there. It's not as big as a
cow. Okay.
Right.
Verse 20.
God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer.
Okay. This one says, expert with the bow. So they're living in the wilderness. They're getting food here and there. He's a hunter. He brings home food. His mother cooks it. And, okay. Verse 21.
While he was living in the desert of Pharaoh, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. She got tired of cooking.
Say what?
She got tired of cooking.
Was she from Egypt?
Yes, yes. Hagar the Egyptian.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would go back to where you were
familiar with.
He was
so busy
hunting,
he didn't
return.
Have time to hunt for a while.
So she did it for him.
Yeah.
Yep.
She learned something from the two. You know,
right.
Yentl.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's a matchmaker.
Yeah.
Now you can read verse 22.
Okay. At the time Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, it might have been a mess. Well, it was a mess. But God was with him, in spite of the messes he made. Verse 23, now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. It's a good move, isn't it?
Abraham's commander?
No, this is Abimelech's. Abimelech saying this to Abraham.
I forget who he was.
The commander of Abraham's army.
No, Abimelech is between Kadesh and Shur in Gerar. And back in 20 verse 2, Abram said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Okay, that's the Abimelech.
Oh, Phicol is the commander of
Of Abimelech's army.
Okay, they're, dangling modifiers here.
Like I tell Denny, complete sentences, please.
Yeah.
Well, it's fairly clear in this translation, at that time Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So, verse 24.
They're in the land of Canaan now?
23, we don't do.
And this is still down in the Negev.
Okay.
I just read 23.
Oh, okay. Done.
24.
And Abraham said, I will swear.
Okay. So there's this agreement. Time passes. But it's not written that time passes. Verse 25.
Then Abraham rebuked Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized.
Ah.
Uh-oh.
Okay, they're dealing honestly with each other. Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. Okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, you didn't tell me about this.
He's telling him now.
So, okay. Now I've heard about it. Verse 27.
So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant.
Okay. And the sheep and the oxen are to seal the covenant and establish the agreement. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart. Verse 29.
And Abimelech asked Abraham, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs you have set apart by themselves?
Verse 30, he said, these 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well. So by receiving the gift, when you sign the check that the insurance company sends to you, you have agreed to their settlement. By receiving the gift of the ewe lambs, Abimelech is acknowledging Abraham dug this well. This well is Abraham's. It's part of our agreement together.
Take your sheep elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So verse 31.
So that place was called Beersheba because the two men swore an oath there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Beersheba means well of seven or well of the oath.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, so timing-wise, it said that back when Hagar went out in the desert, she went to the desert of Beersheba. So how is the timing of this? Or did they just name it after the desert it was dug in? Obviously, it means well of seven, but I'm confused.
Well, they're writing it after the fact, so it already had a name.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But it doesn't say it was named after the desert that it was dug in.
No.
The desert of
in the wilderness of Beersheba. Beersheba. Yeah. And the well of Beersheba. Yeah. So you use the words that designate the place.
So it
would be written later. And she would not have called it Beersheba.
No, P-A-R-A-N. The desert of Paran.
Mm. Yeah, but when Hagar was sent away by
Abraham. We have to go look at the verse. Verse 14, end of verse 14. She departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Beersheba. But it's okay to use a later designation of the place so everybody knows what you're talking about.
So starting at verse 22, it says in my Bible, the treaty at Beersheba, but it could be titled, How That Desert Was Named.
So that was close to Egypt.
Yeah, it could.
You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, so here's what happened.
And that was not necessarily close to Egypt.
Well,
they could take a journey to Egypt to find a wife and come back.
Oh, okay.
Okay? It's how many days' journey? A few days' journey.
They weren't far.
Mm-hmm. Holy Land is not that big.
All small.
No.
Think New Jersey size.
Well,
something like that.
Probably everything had to be like within walking distance. I mean, they weren't driving.
Well, from Galilee to Jerusalem. 3 days' journey. It's not that big, and that's on foot.
Right.
How far is on foot? How far is Joliet? A day or day and a half journey.
Yeah, like a day.
So from here to Joliet is like a third to a half of this of from Galilee in the north to Jerusalem in the south, and over to Egypt is couple days journey. That's all it is.
60 miles.
If a person can walk 30 miles in a day.
Mm-hmm. 20 is standard, 30 is possible. Add a horse, 30 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
So
that well's still there.
I don't know. Offhand.
But is that the well that they found, that she found for Ishmael to give him water?
Don't know.
Because it's Beersheba in the...
Don't know. It's in the wilderness of Beersheba.
Right.
Well, and there is a well there, but there's got to be wells all around.
Well,
and Beersheba is a fairly sizable tract of land.
Abraham sent her away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't be in the same place.
Maybe he was looking out for his son.
Well, how?
Blaming that well.
Huh?
Maybe he was looking out for Ishmael, claiming that well. Telling Abimelech that his...
Well, it's not necessarily the same well.
Right, I know, but if it were, why would he care if it
That's
was away
speculation,
from his crops?
Then.
I know.
But maybe he didn't send her that far away. Just out of his household.
Out of the camp.
Well, yeah.
So Sarah couldn't get to her.
Yeah.
I was
there's a lot
she had to go way away, but I don't think she did.
She didn't have to go hundreds and hundreds of miles away.
Right. She just had to be out of their encampment.
Right. Exactly. And his property and the places where he was grazing his flocks.
Right. Yeah. Well,
if you remember from the television show Bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
It was large. Yeah. Okay?
Yeah.
And if you want to raise flocks and herds,
it has to be large. You need
sizable land.
Feed.
And as the flocks and herds go from region to region in your land, because different places will have growth, and you go from the one to the next to the next to the next, guess what you need to have?
Water.
Yeah, you gotta have wells.
So Abraham probably wasn't totally estranged over from
Israel. We don't know. We do not know.
I mean, he could still
land of the Philistines.
See what's going on with him.
The Philistines were somewhat later. They were seafaring and found Canaan and Palestine, and we pick them up later on. Philistines and Phoenicians and Phoenicians. Guess what the Phoenicians invented?
Ships.
No.
Phones. No.
No.
String,
but
you know. Oh, when you say
it, I'm gonna know. Cause I think.
Oh yeah, letters.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, phonetics.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which before that, think about Egypt, and you got pictograms.
Right.
And often Babylon, cuneiform, little shapes embedded in clay, and the Phoenicians developed letters, which was marvelous.
Yeah.
So we got to finish up this chapter.
Okay.
Anyway, verse 32.
After the treaty had been made at Beersheba, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, returned to the land of the Philistines.
Ah, so they are there, the beginnings of.
Yeah, after just telling us they weren't. Yeah.
they are. They will expand. This may be the first mention of them. Okay.
How far away that was.
33.
Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called upon the name of the Lord, the eternal God.
Mm-hmm. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. So the Philistines are now mentioned.
So they must not... The desert butts up to the water. If the Philistines were a water people?
Well, that's the
sea.
Gaza Strip is desert and water.
Okay.
The Mediterranean Sea and the whole region in there.
Okay.
You go south to the Negev, you go west in the Negev, you're going to end up in the Gaza Strip. And there's still people settled there.
So he had his whole... group of people and cattle and what have you with them while he was traveling around in the Philistines?
Well, they would settle different places. He lived in a tent because if you have to have your cattle and sheep go to different places, and if your cattle and sheep have to eat here and then eat there and eat there, you have to set up wells in the different places. You make claims for that territory. You have to have enough men that you can enforce your claims. And so you go and you move around. This is the nomadic lifestyle.
said this is a desert shrub. It must be like mesquite. Tamarisk tree. Desert shrub.
Okay. We're about done with that chapter. So we've got to get to the really big, big one that we'll not finish today by any
stretch.
By any stretch, yeah. Consult Hebrews chapter 6 at some point in all of this. The last half of Hebrews chapter 6. But Genesis 22, after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. So, what is faith?
Is this the gospel script? Believing the words and promises of God.
Yeah. And the last three words we add on to that? No matter what. That's where the testing has to be. You have the words and promises of God. You pray, you meditate, you hear, you listen, you share the words and promises of God. And then at some point, those words and promises, they have to be tested. Will the words and promises of God be true here and here and here and on this day and that day and the other day? Will they be true in the times of blessing? Will they be true in the times of trial? Mm-hmm. They've got to be tested out. Because if the words and promises of God are not true all the way through, well, then how can you rely on them? If I can get to a place in my life where the words and promises of God, they don't hold up there, I better get different words and promises. So we do this. We say they have got to be tested. Okay. And now Abraham is going to be tested.
Okay.
This is a study Bible in kids, yeah. Life application for students, and it says in here, for tests, God gave Abraham a test, not to trip him and watch him fall, but to deepen his capacity to obey God, and thus to develop his character. Just as fire refines ore to extract precious metals, God refines us through difficult circumstances. When we are tested, we can complain, or we can try to see how God is stretching us to develop our character.
I would modify that.
Okay.
What does God do when he tests us? He tests us to increase our capacity of faith, not our capacity for obedience. Do I trust him in this? Do I trust him in that? And the whole purpose is to develop the faith and the trust in the words and promises of God. Because that's what he's after. That's where the relationship is. I can obey him and think that he is being absolutely horrible to me. That's not the trust. My son can obey me and sit down and do his homework and be gritting his teeth and muttering curse words at his father the whole time, but he's obeying. That's no good.
Can't you do both?
The obeying will come.
I mean,
but what God is working at developing in the soul is what? Faith.
In your heart.
Faith.
Trust.
He wants his words and promises to be believed and trusted. That's the basic core of it. Adam had a test. Will you believe the words and promises of God? Don't eat that fruit. Will you believe this? Even when There's the snake saying, "Ooh, I bet that tastes real good. Will you believe God and trust his words when he says, don't do that? If you trust him, then it's not a question of whether you're going to obey. That comes when Adam no longer trusted and believed the words of God, when he turned and believed the words of the devil, then he stepped out and disobeyed. Lyrics from the song, "A Canaanite She Comes to Pray." Outside the camp, he came to win my soul from God and bring again mankind into communion, unraveling our twisted faith in Satan's lies, Christ's faithful death has brought us reconciliation, or something like that. Okay?
Or something like that.
But unraveling our twisted faith in Satan's lies. And writing that lyric down was, oh. It labels it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Who are you going to believe? And God is testing Abraham. Who will you believe? Will you believe the words and promises and the one who gave you the words and promises that you have heard your entire life? Will you believe it even in this? How extreme can you go for even in this? What's the measure of your no matter what, Abraham? That's still the measure for us, isn't it? And that's the whole issue. God invites us into his words and promises, doesn't he? Are those words and promises for us? Are they true? Are they to be trusted? And that's the measure of faith. And when God calls us through the gospel, say, I'm going way off on this in the first verse. When we did our study working through Hebrews, what's his first name? Delitzsch, the commentary we were working on. He pushed and opened and pried at everything in that and said, basically, the reason why Jesus had to go to the cross and suffer damnation, and there in the middle of the darkness say, my God, was to show that the words and promises of God were going to hold true even for those hours on the cross. And he was going to trust those words and promises to prove to us that the words and promises will hold everywhere, through everything, in every situation, for every day and moment of our lives. And that's part of what Jesus does on the cross, is he establishes the words and promises of God and calls us by those words and promises of God and into those words and promises of God, so that we can then believe the words and promises of God in our little moments of darkness. That's what it's all about. And that's why the letter to the Hebrews ends up going through chapter 11. By faith this, by faith that, by faith the other thing. And then chapter 12, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising its shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. That's all of what's in play here, and that's the focus.
I think that would be test ever. You can ask me to give up my life,
but
don't ask me to take one of my kids' lives. I just can't.
Well,
right. Who Hagar said, I can't watch my son die.
Okay, who gave up his son's life?
I know.
It wasn't Abraham.
I know.
Abraham's not allowed to do that.
But God, he doesn't realize that in the beginning.
That's right.
Right.
And that's the whole thing.
So Abraham is walking the path of God the Father.
Right. No, because God did give up his son.
No, he's walking that path.
He just didn't cross
and
the
God
line.
And God the Father will walk it with him until God says, this far, no further. You're not allowed to do this, but you walked this with me. Abraham has this incredible insight into the heart of God the Father, which is absolutely astounding.
It is.
Because if Abraham was in anguish, you know it anguished God the Father for Jesus to do what he had to do to save us.
Go forth, my son, the Father said, and free men from death's awful dread, from fear and condemnation. The wrath and stripes are hard to bear, but by your suffering they will share the fruit of your salvation. Yes, Father, yes, most willingly I'll do what you command me. My will conforms to your decree. I'll do what you have asked me. A wondrous love. What have you done? The Father offers up his Son, the Son content descended. Oh yeah, and then finishing that verse, oh love, how strong you are to save, you lay him low within the grave whose word the world created. Okay. Verse 2 then.
He said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you.
Okay, let me do a slightly different translation. He said, take your only begotten son, whom you love, and take him to Jerusalem, and take him to Mount Calvary, and offer him on the wood with the fires of judgment on the mountain where I'm going to do that.
Wow. But he wasn't his only begotten son.
No, he translated.
Well, this is the God language.
Yeah.
Because your son, your only son. Why does he say that? He's not Abraham's only son.
Yeah.
But it is God language. It is almost transparent that this is what God is doing. Now, who's talking to Abraham? Is it second person of the Trinity? Is it first person of the Trinity? Can we say for sure?
The original text said Elohim.
Which is the generic for God, which is plural. But who is it? There are certain places where, and this happens in Zechariah, where there's, first it says, 30 pieces of silver, the lordly price at which they priced me. And then it says, a couple of verses later, they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only son. Him? Who's talking? That's two different people there. First it is Jesus having his say, then it is the Father having his say. So there are points where, who's talking? I'm not quite so sure. in some of these things. Okay, verse 3.
So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him.
Okay.
Two thieves on the cross.
Oh, wait, let me translate again. So he rose early in the morning and got a donkey for his son to ride to Jerusalem on, and took the wood for the sacrifice and went out to the place of the appointed sacrifice. Verse 4. Oh, and by the way, there were disciples that went along with. Verse 4.
On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar.
We're going to have a pre-echo now. Anticipating the third day, he lifted up his eyes and saw the place. Verse 5.
He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you."
Okay. So, you disciples and the donkey too, stay behind. I and my son, my only son, my only begotten son, are going to go over there. And we will do this thing called worship. Not the worship that everybody else does. We're going to do the one act of worship that is going to look like it's backwards and inside out, but this is what it really is. And every other worship is an echo of this.
So he probably told Sarah what he's going to do.
Yeah. We just leave that one out. Verse 6.
Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together.
So the father took his son and put the wood on him and made him carry the wood just like out Jesus to the place of the sacrifice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Verse 7.
And Isaac said to his father, Abraham, "My father," and he said, "Here am I, my son." He said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?"
So the one who is laughter, then talks to his father. Where's the lamb for the burnt offering?
Well, he didn't know, but Jesus knew.
Oh, yeah?
He was.
Yeah. Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will. Verse 8.
Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together.
I think that there is the hardest answer a father has ever had to give to a child anywhere in the Bible. And Abraham does not completely know how this is all going to happen.
He has to go.
God is calling him to this place. He has to go. Now, we say with very and extremely significant events in the Bible that God does not just give you an inkling. He makes it very clear. And we're going to say that about this. This is not just a feeling inside that he has to go to this mountain. He doesn't know what mountain it is. But God is very much directing him.
And giving him the faith to go. Yeah.
Now, will he continue on in the faith? At this point, walking up the mountain, that remains to be seen, doesn't it? Verse 9.
When they reached the place God had told them about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood.
So he's going to build the altar, probably stones put together. Then he's going to arrange the wood on the stones. And then he's going to tie up his son.
And Isaac just let him do that? He must have thought he was strange.
Okay, now the question is, what about the faith of Isaac? Because Abraham's walking the path, playing the part of who? God the Father. Isaac is then playing the part of who?
Jesus.
And Jesus is the one who goes there with faith.
Well, Isaac must have trusted Abraham a lot. Let him do that. He would. I shall think, what are you doing?
How old?
Yeah.
Old was he?
Old enough to carry the wood.
Yeah.
Which had to be. He had to weigh enough.
And know that, yeah.
Yeah. So we're not talking 3 years old.
No.
Verse 10.
Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son.
This is the place where will you hold to following God's word no matter what when he reaches out to take the knife? And you can imagine the conflict that is going on in his soul. Is he allowed to raise his hand and start the downward stroke?
Nope.
No. At that point, that's enough. He doesn't have to begin the motion of slaying his son. God does not want him going that far. Verse 11.
But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Oh, there's that the angel of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, here I am, he replied.
Yeah. This is where God is going to intervene. He's going to say, thus far. Verse 12.
He said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.
Okay.
Abraham kind of questioned God when he said he'd give him Abraham, but here he wasn't questioning.
Was he?
Or give him Isaac, yeah.
Was he questioning? Turmoil.
Yeah. But he knew God came through with that first promise, so he had the trust.
Mm-hmm. Letter to the Hebrews says he believed that he would receive his son Isaac back from the dead, if that was what God had planned. And that's inspired, that letter. So we know a little bit of what was going on inside his soul as the different parts of him were screaming at each other. And with that, we have to leave it, because then God is going to say some things to him that are quite remarkable. And we'll be into Hebrews and all sorts of different places at that point.